morning. Welcome to the show. It is mid-morning on midweek, Wednesday morning. Great to have you here. And thanks to everyone who's been chiming in and joining the conversation this morning on the text line. We talked about the canola tariffs. Lots of people joining in there. And many people, I've always appreciated, for example, Terry from Indian Head says, don't forget, we got a tariff on yellow peas, which has dropped in price at least $2 a bushel. To put this in perspective, if the peas are going for 50 bushel an acre, you lose $2 a bushel. Yeah, it ends up being big money. So, Terry, thank you so much for the text and for joining the conversation. Lots of people also texting in pictures. I mentioned this morning that Bix pickles are getting harder to find on Canadian store shelves. They are greatly affected by the Canadian counter tariffs that have been put on. The company, which has got basically, I won't say equal parts, but it's got parts of Canada and parts of the States. We know a lot of the cucumbers that are used to make the pickles are sourced from Canada. The jar lids are sourced from Canada, yet they are subject to counter tariffs because of the back and forth that happens to putting these together and producing them. So lots of people are texting pictures of store shelves being empty with little sad faces or emojis beside their picture. Are you a Bix pickle person? I dare say in our province, there's a lot of people who have pickles in their fridge that are homemade. We tend to, we're not pickle makers in my family, but boy, we've got lots of family and friends who are, which keep us fairly well stocked. But that said, Bix pickles have been in our fridge for sure. No doubt this will have an implication on the market going forward. Okay. So enough about pickles, enough about some of these other topics that we've been talking about. This is the point every month where we like to focus on energy. Our province has known for a lot of different industries, and energy production is one of them. Oil and gas, obviously a big part of it, but we can extrapolate it out from there, whether it's talking about nuclear, which is becoming more and more a topic of conversation. We've seen recently the Canadian government, although they up until now have seen and shown very little interest in using LNG as an export advantage for our country. Now they're talking about it. Talking, not doing, but talking. We'll see if that turns into something more. If we're going to talk about energy, though, that's why I like to have on a monthly basis our friend Brian Zinchuk join us. Brian is the editor and owner of pipelineonline.ca, Saskatchewan's energy news, a regular contributor to my program, and is joining us for today, a full hour of conversation, which means the phone and text lines are also open. So we've got, if we have someone like Brian, who's an expert in the field and who has his thumb on the pulse of energy production in our province and our country, if you have a question for him, you can always shoot it in on the text line at 1-877-332-8255 or give us a call. Brian Zinchuk, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Evan.
Great to have you here. How's your summer been so far? I know you usually try and take a little time off in the summer. You get away to that cabin of yours?
A little bit, not as much as I would like, but hopefully we're going to get out there next week. It's kind of been a bit slow in some ways, and that is a very accurate reflection for the oil patch, because a lot of the people I'm talking to are telling me it's slow, and it's starting to have an impact on the bottom line.
It's slow. Why?
Well, for instance, right now, I just did a count here. We have 29 drilling rigs working in Saskatchewan. That is a very low number for the summer. As 2 years ago, we would see maybe 49 rigs working. So that is a 40% decrease? And 49 is a lot lower than we used to have 100 working in 10 years ago. So, activity on that is being greatly affected, not only by oil price, but also by the advent of the multilateral wells, which I've talked about almost every month for the past year. It's really making an impact. Mm-hmm. I talked to one driller, I'll hopefully be doing a story on this. They're doing, I think, 15 legs on one well. Well, that's phenomenal on the drilling side. But if you're on the service side of that, and that rig, instead of drilling, 5 or 10 individual wells, which is what they probably would have done otherwise, that's an enormous reduction in the amount of activity.
So you, Brian, when you mentioned, so you say a number of years ago, we might have seen 100 rigs going at this time. Now we're at 40% of where we were a couple of years ago, but we're still down significantly, 29 rigs. How closely does that tie to oil prices? Basically, if prices are depressed, then the rigs aren't working. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, so it's kind of the magic number for a number of years in Saskatchewan has been $65 for a barrel of oil for WTI, West Texas Intermediate. And the price that this morning is, I was just looking at it here, $62. So it is down a couple dollars from that. It's been relatively flat since late June, early July. We did have a spike of $70 on June 30th. But it's come down quite a bit since June 30th. So it's come down $8. That's enough to make a difference. And, above $65, activity picks up a bit. Below it, people start cutting back. The oil companies, I know, have been asking service companies, "Hey, can you give us a reduction on prices? We bid this out and do another round of bidding to see who comes in the lowest bidder?" Well, a lot of these service companies still are not making the money they used to make in 2014. Mm. So imagine in any other industry like McDonald's, going back to the price that they were charging for Big Macs in 2014. Do you think they'd be doing okay with today's inflation? So it's kind of hurting.
So when you talk about the service industry, so this is the industry ancillary to those rigs and companies that are out there drilling for oil. These are the companies that support them. They provide a variety of services. And when you see now multilateral drilling in use, it still produces obviously good volume in terms of product, but there's less work required on the surface, which means there's less need for these companies. Are you seeing them adapt, Brian? Are you seeing them find other ways in which they can support the industry, or is it having a fatal effect on some businesses?
It is hurting. I can tell you that for sure. Some are trying. If you're a dirt mover, you can use your dozer to build roads and stuff like that if there's a market for it, if the local RM wants to do it, that sort of thing. But if you are, for instance, in the casing services, one of my advertisers handles casing. Well, that is very specific. It's only to related to drilling and service rigs, and that's it. Same thing for a service rig. You can't use a service rig on a farm or on another industrial site. It has no other purpose. The thing you have to remember is that the Saskatchewan oil patch, the vast, vast majority of both jobs and dollars is in the services, because the oil companies are largely based in Calgary. So, that's where the bulk of the money is. And when those services slow down, I'm really concerned, and I've expressed this to people in government, that unless we get more rigs in the field, we could end up looking like the Newfoundland cod fishery. And that is not an exaggeration. Mm. So we didn't finish off on the oil prices here. Brent prices is $65 today. Western Canadian Select is $50.10, that I saw a few minutes ago. So we do have about a $12 differential between WTI and Western Canadian Select, and a $15 differential to Brent. Now, that's why putting more pipelines to the coast is important, because then we get exposed to the world price, the tanker price. So we'd be getting closer to $65. We'll never get the exact same amounts, the different quality of oil, but doing TMX did definitely improve that differential, so we're making more per barrel. We need to do that more. We need another pipeline to Prince Rupert, for instance. I spoke to the Premier about that in Saskatoon briefly. He said the big push was we need a pipeline to the Northwest BC.
Okay. There's so many areas that I want to go with you this morning, Brian. I want to talk coal. There's a bunch we can talk about there. You've put out a number of stories recently. I want to talk about this Rush Lake blowout and what that means and has meant to production in the province. And as I mentioned, phone and text lines are always open for you at 1-877-332-8255 if you want to ask a question of Brian Zinchuk, our energy expert. Can I call you that, Brian? Our energy expert.
Some people do. I don't know. I have a pretty fat head to get through some doors. Before we do that, I forgot to mention here, I usually don't mention gas prices because we don't produce a lot of natural gas in Saskatchewan. But you know, right now, gas prices on the AECO or the AECO market are some of the lowest you're ever going to see. In fact, they hit $0 for a day briefly in July. They've been floating in the 50 cent to or 34 cent range, 78 cents yesterday. The reality is these gas prices are the lowest you're probably going to see in years. And if you look at the futures prices, they're all going up. And they're likely going to be double, roughly speaking, 1.5 times to double what we've seen for most of the last 10 years. We're going to see gas prices in the $2.50 to $3.75 range if the futures are correct.
So that'll impact the home heating costs, obviously, if that happens.
Well, that impacts Saskatchewan in two big ways, home heating and industrial usage, but it also will impact us when it comes to power bills because, you know, on any given day, 40 to 50% of our power generation is natural gas. 92% of that comes from Alberta, and it's based on that AECO price. So what that means is that as LNG Canada is now online, as those prices are expected to improve, they haven't improved much yet, but as they do improve, as we get more LNG Canada, or LNG to the coast, it's good for the Canadian marketplace, yes, good for the Canadian economy, especially Alberta and BC. However, those higher prices will be higher prices that we will be paying as well.
Okay. On that note, we'll take our break. Brian Zinchuk is my guest, editor-owner of PipelineOnline.ca. We've got Brian with us right up until 11 o'clock. If you have a question, shoot us a text, give us a call, and we'll dig into coal and the revival of coal and how some people are cheering, some people are going to court, and what Brian's thoughts are on that when we come back here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME. Every month we take some time to talk energy. It's oil and gas. It could be LNG. It could be nuclear. It could be coal. And that's where we're going to go next. And again, my guest, as I've called, resident expert here in the province, Brian Zinchuk, who is the editor and owner of PipelineOnline.ca, Saskatchewan's Energy News, is who is joining me. So actually, before we get into coal, Ian from Saskatoon sent a text in. Brian, we were talking about prices, oil prices. Ian says, WTI $65. Is that U.S.? What's the price for a Canadian company?
Yeah, that's the U.S., so you'd have to do the conversion to Canadian dollars, whatever the current exchange rate is. Globally, almost all commodities are priced in U.S. dollars.
Yeah, okay. So just like Ian, if you have a question for Brian, and I've got two or three actually that have just come in the last couple of minutes here, 1-877-332-8255. Okay, we had Minister Jeremy Harrison on the program about a month and a half ago once the announcement was made about, okay, we're no longer going to end the use of coal in Saskatchewan. We are going to, in fact, grow the use of coal over the next little while. There was various reasons given for it. One of them is it's inexpensive. It's something that we have here and we've got infrastructure set up to use it. We heavily rely on it now. This, of course, runs counterintuitive to what the federal government has been urging provinces to do with the use of coal. I asked Minister Harrison when he was on the show if he was worried about that. And if you will remember, he was essentially saying, well, no, we're not worried about it. We see that we don't really have a lot of options, and other provinces are looking at this as well. What's the mood been in the parts of the province, Estevan, Coronach, where oil is a big business, Brian?
Well, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers is throwing a party in Estevan on the 26th and another one in Coronach on the 27th. They're happy about it. There's been a notable sigh of relief. There's in Estevan, we had a project, a residential project that was basically on hold for 10 years. They built a subdivision near the hospital that never got developed. They went to the city and got it rezoned, and now they're looking to build rental units. You know, so, I mean, that's an immediate impact of this sort of announcement. It's It is huge. I had my lead story for Monday, and if you scroll down on the website, you'll see it. It's high up there. I had a 4,000-word story interviewing Alina Young, who's the MLA for Southern Regina. I can't remember which one it is, sorry. She's a critic for Jobs Economy and SaaS Power, and she's done SaaS Power for a long time. And, you know, Minister Harrison has been saying that the NDP will shut down coal immediately. There's a little bit of hyperbole of that. So I asked them, you know, what are they going to do? And she said, well, clearly we're not going to shut it down immediately because basically we don't have any other options. But we're also not going to pour money into it either, into an asset that's near its end of life and that, you know, we're expecting to replace with nuclear. So the biggest issue when it comes to something like this is if you have a change in government and they do not stay on the same path. So does that lead, you know, put questionability back into the eyes of the coal miners and the electrical workers? You know, that's a, I encourage you to read the story and make your own conclusion.
So I'm curious, Brian. So I don't know if it was your words or Elena Young's words saying coal was at end of life, because my understanding is the deposits in Saskatchewan could easily carry us through till the transition to nuclear happens.
Oh, literally hundreds of years. No, what we're talking about here is the fact that Boundary Dam in particular was built in the 60s and 70s, yeah. And that individual units are reaching 50 years, and that's considered to be, you know, pretty much worn out, and it legally, according to federal regulation, that's considered end of life. Poplar River is getting very close to that as well. The problem is that, you know, in some ways, Saskatchewan did paint itself into a corner. Because we didn't build a lot of baseload power to replace it, we built a few natural gas plants. We've got one under construction near Lanigan right now, 370 megawatts, called Aspen. The reality is, if we were to shut down coal in 4 years, 4 months, and 18 days, which is the current federal legislation that we're supposed to be following, we would have to start construction immediately, not like a year from now, but right now, on four Aspens. And the problem is that Aspen, which is basically a clone of the one in Moose Jaw, is double the price of the one in Moose Jaw that just went online in December. Mm. That's not from wages doubling. That's not from all sorts of other stuff. That's the cost of these things, the inflation that's happened in building power infrastructure has doubled the cost of that one. It's went from $825 million in Moose Jaw to $1.7 billion. So we'd have to start four of those immediately, just to replace coal, never mind any growth in the grid.
Brian Zinchuk is my guest. We've only got about a minute left before our next break, but Brian's with us until 11 o'clock. The Saskatchewan Environmental Society has actually launched a legal challenge against the government of Saskatchewan. Maybe not surprising to see this, Brian?
Well, and the fact that I believe one of them is 12 years old, obviously they're trying to do the Greta Thunberg thing. You know, the reality is that governments need to be able to make policy. And having a judicial review on government policy, is that where our democracy is going?
Well, I can tell you, from my chair, we see court challenges on almost everything. I'm not even getting into the pronoun discussion here. Okay, 1-877-332-8255. I've got a few questions for Brian, myself, plus some that are coming in on the text line as well. Brian Zinchuk with us till 11 o'clock, pipelineonline.ca. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Evan Bray, on a Wednesday morning with Brian Zinchuk, our regular monthly check-in with Brian, who is the editor and owner of PipelineOnline.ca. We talk anything oil and gas and energy production. We were talking briefly, you were talking about LNG, but we talked about natural gas, and it elicited a text from Linda in Saskatoon, who I you probably would like me to read it, but I won't go into great detail. But she is very complimentary of how you explain things every month you come on the show. It helps her understand the industry. So we'll give you a tip of the hat, Brian, for that. She says you've done a good job of helping her understand how oil is extracted from the ground. She said, how is natural gas extracted from the ground, Brian?
So natural gas, generally speaking, it's It's a related product to petroleum. Often it's produced at the same time, or it's in Saskatchewan, most of our natural gas comes from what we call associated gas. What that means is that you drill oil and there's gas in that oil and it kind of bubbles out just like fizz out of a Coca-Cola. And in some places you just get the fizz. It's and that's the gas that's collected. Saskatchewan is very much what we would call an oily basin, where it's most of our production is oil, and whereas Alberta is largely, especially to the west, and especially to the northwest, is a gassy basin. We have primarily more gas than oil for most for drilling. So what's significant is that Saskatchewan has only drilled 10 gas wells in the last 10 years. We used to drill 2,000 wells or more a year about 20 years ago. Now we're down to less than one a year, sometimes not even that. So the reality is that almost all of our production comes from the fizz that comes with it, but we are not a major gas producer. Alberta probably drilled 10 wells of gas today by now.
So let's just stay on that topic for a second, because I listened to an interview that Vashi Kapelos did with Energy and Natural Resources Minister Tim Hodgson this week. He's saying he's confident there's a market for Canadian liquefied natural gas. He says he knows there's buyers out there. But then when asked whether his government was prepared to scrap some of the controversial environmental policies implemented by the former Liberal government, he kind of, I think, retracted a bit and wouldn't say. Thoughts on what you're hearing out of the feds on LNG, Brian?
I think there's a lot of elation that LNG Canada finally, you know, got across the finish line. It is actually, you know, shipping cargoes. So that's important. I think that people are going to start realizing that as that money starts flowing, and First Nations in BC, a lot of them are going to benefit from this. You know, I think that's going to really open up some eyeballs. And, you know, there's other projects. I cannot pronounce the one that's near Alaska, Kiss the Limbs or something like that. Plus there's also Cedar LNG. Those ones have large Aboriginal ownership content. You know, once those start getting to the finish line, actually start producing revenue, I think that's going to have a big impact. As for the feds, have they changed much? You know, a lot of people are willing to give the Carney government a lot of leeway to try them out, but I think the patience is going to be waning very soon, in that they need to see actual action, such as getting rid of the tanker ban for oil, getting rid of Bill C-69, the Impact Assessment Act, or at least modifying it very heavily to make it actually possible to build things, and also Bill C-59, which is the Thou Shalt Not Say Anything Nice About the Oil and Gas Sector Act, which is still very much in place.
Right. I noticed we had a text on the text line about that as well. Brian Zinchuk is my guest. Okay, where should we go next? What about, so I know you recently were talking, in fact, you just sent me a story this morning about Whitecap and CO2. Can you give us details on this story?
Yeah, so at the end of June, and I didn't get a chance to write about this then because I was really heavy into the whole coal piece. But Whitecap sold two carbon hubs in Saskatchewan, one in Alberta. And what those were, one project is for Regina, where they would collect carbon dioxide from the refinery, from the Federated Co-op ethanol plant at Belle Plaine, all the potash operations and the refinery in Moose Jaw and Belle Plaine area. And they would collect all that, and they would put it into a CO2 injection well. Now, part of that would be eventually possibly building a pipeline to the Weyburn unit, but the initial idea was put into injection well and just put it straight into the ground. And well, it turns out if you just put it in the ground, don't use it for enhanced oil recovery, the only economic return you can get from that is carbon credits if you're lucky, input tax credits from the feds, or feeling good about it, because that's it. So the what they at Whitecap was leading this. They are also working on a similar project up in the North Battleford area. They basically said, you know, unless we're using CO2 for enhanced oil recovery, it doesn't make sense for us to stay in this. So they sold it to a company called Entropy. And Entropy has a $200 million investment from a company called Brookfield. You might have heard of Brookfield and a guy named Carney who used to lead that. So Entropy has bought the Regina Carbon Hub, and whether that advances or not, I don't know. The fact that the provincial government has said the output-based pricing system, the industrial carbon tax, yeah, we're throwing that out because that's power pays most of it anyhow, and we're just not going to do that anymore. So that threw that all into a monkey wrench into it. What's really important is that one of my competitors, another Saskatchewan media, did a story based on the fact that they were selling this to Entropy. And if you read that story, you could get the impression that Whitecap was getting out of CO2. And a former cabinet minister showed me this story while I was in Saskatoon 2 weeks ago. And so I phoned up the CEO of Whitecap at Grant Fagerheim, a gentleman from Estan originally, and I said, you know, some people get the impression you're getting out of CO2. And my lengthy story, which is my lead right now, if anyone wants to read it, talks about how, you know, Whitecap found doing it for making feel good about saving the planet does not have any economic return. So they're getting out of that. But they absolutely want more CO2 for enhanced oil recovery in the Weyburn unit. And if South Power were to add additional carbon capture onto its coal fleet that's being rejuvenated, they are very eager to buy that. Mm. So that ties very much into the coal story, is that now that we're looking at, you know, keeping coal going, now is a chance to actively look at maybe we should do more enhanced oil recovery. And I know the provincial government is at least considering that.
So does a company like Whitecap, if they use CO2 for enhanced oil recovery, do they get environmental credits for that as well?
Federal government doesn't really want to give any sort of input tax credits for using for enhanced oil recovery. It's expressly not included. If they put it just in the ground, they would get federal tax credits, but if they don't, use it to actually produce a real product. And by the way, the numbers are for every ton of CO2 you put in the ground, you get about 3 barrels of oil. You know, that adds up when you put 2 million tons of CO2 in the ground.
You'd think they would. I mean, it makes common sense to me that they would include that in the credit scheme.
You would think. And I mean, Fagerheim and other CEOs have, you know, really railed about that because that would make sense. If your concern is getting rid of carbon dioxide because you think it's the devil, well, why wouldn't you encourage people to do that? But, oh my God, it's associated with oil production. We can't have that. And this is really the Trudeau craziness syndrome in government. That is why that is not allowed.
Okay. Brian Zinchuk is my guest. We're going to continue on. Let's get into nuclear a little bit because this has obviously been a fairly strong topic of conversation. In fact, you just recently, I think, broke the story that some land was purchased.
Yep. Let's get into that.
Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, we're not going for a break
no,
right now?
No, we've got a couple minutes left. So let's let's at least start the topic.
So on nuclear, the Saskatchewan hosted 11 provinces and states at something called the Midwest Legislative Conference in Saskatoon, which I attended here at the end of July. And it was the chair of that was Lori Carr from Estevan, the MLA for Estevan. And she got to choose what the topic was for the major thrust bit, and it was on energy. And there was a very heavy part of this conference was talking about nuclear in particular. Premier Moe was on stage for an hour with the CEO of Cameco, Tim Geitzel, and the CEO of Westinghouse Canada as well. He talked, you know, he strongly suggested that Saskatchewan might be looking at large nuclear reactors instead of small reactors. Now, that's not a policy decision that's been made yet, obviously. But in its licensing application for a nuclear site, be it small or large, SaskPower has been, you know, narrowing down its sites. So they're looking at a location on the east side of Boundary Dam Reservoir, close to the park, near the towers there. That's one location that's being considered, and the other one's being considered on the north shore of Rafferty Reservoir, which is 7 to 10 times the size of Boundary Dam, and that's a big issue, the amount of water you have, especially if you're going to build large reactors. Well, it turns out that SaskPower had optioned some land south of Rafferty, and those options were expiring, so they bought that land. They paid a $600,000 per quarter. I think they bought five or so. There's a total of 6 parcels, including an acreage. And there's really not much else out there except there's 1 or 2 farms, and it's otherwise pretty much barren and open. And I've taken MLAs out there to show them what this place is like. But we bought the land should we need it for a reactor, be it big or small or multiple reactors. So it's now in the hands of SaskPower.
A step towards that. Another step, I should say, towards that. Okay, now we will take a break. Brian Zinchuk is my guest. We'll be back to finish up the chat with him in a moment here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
must be lonely, huh? When she says, baby, well, I can't help but be scared of it all sometimes. And the rain's gonna wash away, I believe it.
Welcome back to the show, Evan Bray. Geez, I just looked at our lineup for the rest of the show. This has been a great morning. We're going to finish up with Brian Zinchuk momentarily. 11 o'clock, Saskatchewan's smartest radio listener. 11:30, a couple of NHL stars will be joining us. Matthew Barnaby and Kevin Kaminsky will be on the program getting set for that big supper in Delisle on Friday night. And then at 12 o'clock today, we're going to check in with Team Sask out in Newfoundland there for the Jeux Canada Games. We'll talk about the trials and tribulations, not just with the competition, but we got smoke from forest fires on Newfoundland and in the area. We also have an Air Canada strike that is causing flights to be canceled. What the implications of that will be as well. So that's all yet to come on the show. Brian, I want to ask you a question here. I got a text from John in Lampman saying, can you ask Brian about the steam mess by Lloyd? This is where farmers have been evacuated from their home. Livestock can't be out in certain pastures. What is that all about, Brian?
All right. So we have to start by explaining what SAGD is. That stands for steam assisted gravity drainage. The heavy oil in northwest Saskatchewan, the Lloydminster region, north Battleford, around Lloydminster, whatnot, is basically the consistency of peanut butter. And it does not like to come out of the ground easily. So the way you have to get it out is you have to lower its viscosity, and usually you do that by pumping incredibly hot steam at high pressure into the ground. That's the steam part of SAGD. And that could be like 200-300 degrees Celsius. It's like we're talking really hot stuff. So we got to burn natural gas, create the steam, pump the steam into the ground, and then the steam basically melts the oil underground, and it flows into a second well. So you have an injector well, and then it's right beside it, about 6 feet below it. You have a second well that is your producer, and the oil flows into that well. And then it comes back and gets pumped up to surface. It's very, very hot, heavy oil. So there are a number of plants throughout northwest Saskatchewan. Husky built 12 of them before Cenovus bought them. And these plants go for about $370 million each for the most recent ones that Strathcona's building. So the Husky ones are about $350 million. Each one of these has a number of pads, which is an area, you know, about maybe 15 acres, 10 acres, that'll have what are called well pairs, where you have two of these wells. One is an injector, one's a producer. And a lot of these pads are 6 to 8 pairs. The most recent one in that area is called Rush Lake 2, which is basically you go from Maidstone, you go straight east towards the river, and just before you go over the edge of the valley, that's where Rush Lake 2 is. So it's right at the top of the plateau. And one of the well pairs there, in this is one of the newer facilities, it had a failure, and I believe they said, here's one second, it says the steam release is from a casing failure of an injection well, and we are undertaking a thorough investigation to determine the root cause of a failure. That was from Cenovus. So what happened was that a bunch of the steam made its way out to the surface, and that literally bubbled up from the ground, like a giant bubbling cauldron, and released enormous quantities of steam. And some of that, I believe, was sour, which means hydrogen sulfide, which is the concerns you're talking about.
Right.
It also means that at low concentrations of hydrogen sulfide, you can smell it. It smells like rotten eggs. And people were smelling it 20 kilometers or more away. So hydrogen sulfide at higher concentrations can kill you, which is why some people had to be moved away. Now, I saw videos that were being sent to me throughout the summer, you know, people walking around at the site without wearing breathing apparatus. So clearly the H2S concentrations were safe enough to stand 20 yards away and not die. So they weren't as bad as some people might think they were.
Hmm.
Otherwise, there'd be a whole bunch of dead people there.
Wow. So this cleanup continues, obviously.
Yeah, so they finally, just a few days ago, I think they published here, on the 31st, they finally brought it under control. And it happened in early May. I think it was May 8th. So it's been a real mess. They've had a lot of people out there working on trying to get this sorted out. Now, so now we've got to clean it up. But here's the big thing, is that this site will likely have to be shut down and abandoned. Not just it, but possibly the one beside it as well, Rush Lake 1. And Rush Lake 1 is an earlier one, so it was probably closer to $250 million. You add it all up, we're looking at possibly up to $700 million investment that might have to be abandoned.
Wow.
A total of 32,000 barrels, potentially, if they have to shut both down. And if that's the case, that's 7% of Saskatchewan production. That is an enormous blow to the industry.
And no doubt efforts will be made to try and prevent that from happening. I mean, I'm guessing those types of things are underway already, but boy, that's big. Well, listen, Brian, we have run out of time. There's always topics we don't get to, which just means I'll add them to the list for next month. As always, we appreciate you popping by. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, I hope Cenovus can get it sorted out, because that's a huge thing to walk away from. Thank you.
Okay, Brian. Thanks so much. Brian Zinchuk, editor, owner of PipelineOnline.ca. That's where you can go to find in-depth reading into all of these stories that we've talked about today and a whole lot more. It's the location for Saskatchewan's energy news, PipelineOnline.ca. Okay, we'll take our break. We'll come back. Saskatchewan's smartest radio listener is next. Here on 650 CKOM 980 CJME.